The American dream has become a nightmare. Signs of the time are on cardboard, on corners in town. Like a cancer that's silently spreading, there's an unspoken fear. We're on our way down. We must take America back. Main Street to Wall Street, cities and states, Washington, D.C. Before it's too late, there's not long. We need leaders who lead us, not stick us and bleed us, then ransom our future and our children's, that's wrong. We must take America back as liberty weeps, our forefathers spin in their graves. Pray God will bless some way out of this mess. We must take America back.
Welcome back.
Lord knows they'll try to silence our voice.
Yep. Top of the second hour of today's National Intel Report. This is Friday, July 6th, 2018. Between weekends, where undoubtedly Independence Day celebrations are sort of divided, which I think is, I don't know, a metaphor for how we've been balkanized in America, which is more than divide and conquer or divide and rule. It's a continual dividing, a process of continual division, which is, you know, the speaks to the etymological roots of the term balkanization and the nefarious activities that produce it, the nefarious motivations behind it, the Machiavellian machinations that, you know, that underscore it. So anyway, kind of talking about the issue of Independence Day and so forth, and how free we are or are not. I'll mention it again, but, you know, again, the way John Adams put it, and I'll refer more to some of, you know, what he wrote, what he said, and some other folks, and we'll just kind of compare notes then to now and see how we're doing. I like to think, and I like to start with the question. So these guys, you know, they talked about recorded the expanse of recorded history and had command of it, like they knew it like the back of their hand, so to speak. And so today, since we're so much smarter and so much better, we obviously know all of that and much more, right? Oh, no, wait, we don't. Why don't we? Well, that had to be included because, again, as well, you know, first of all, John Adams, again, he wrote in a letter to Abigail, posterity, you will never know how much it costs the present generation to preserve your freedom. I hope you will make good use of it. If you do not, I shall repent in heaven that I ever took half the pains to preserve it. So you fast forward to today, there was a concerted effort at the turn of the 20th century to rewrite history, to propagandize the American people from cradle to grave. And the Rees Committee proved it in their investigation. It was so shocking what happened that the way Thomas McNeice put it, the assistant director of research to the committee, he wrote in his report to the committee titled The Economics of the Public Interest. This was back in 1954, after they did research based on, you know, the House Select Committee to Investigate Tax-Exempt Foundations and Comparable Organizations convened a committee. The Cox Committee was first, and named after Edward Cox, and that committee basically said, nope, nothing to see here, ship shape. Foundations do what foundations do. And unsatisfied with that answer, the Reese Committee was convened, named after Carol Reese. And so the investigation continued, but Norman Dodd was the director of research, Thomas McNeese, the assistant director. You can, if you're not familiar, you should definitely look up what Norman Dodd told J. Edward Griffin in particular back in the 80s and Charlotte Isserby, you know, how Horace Rowan Gaither Jr., Rowan Gaither, newly minted leadership at the Ford Foundation, brazenly told Norman Dodd that the Ford Foundation operates on directives that issue from the White House, the substance of which is to so alter life in America as to create a comfortable merger with the Soviet Union. And Norman Dodd basically almost fell off his chair and said, well, since the Ford Foundation is underwritten by the American people through its tax-exempt status, would you mind testifying in Congress to that effect? And Gaither said that'll never happen. And then when Catherine Casey was sent to investigate the Carnegie Endowment, she was given carte blanche to look into the meeting minutes and discovered from the very beginning, and she was a plant. She was never supposed to find anything. But she discovered from the very beginning that the Carnegie Endowment for so-called peace was trying to figure out how to alter life in America the same way. And they settled on the fact that historically war is the most effectual means to change society. So they set immediately upon steering America into a state of perpetual war at the Carnegie Endowment for so-called peace. So having all of this and much more evidence, volumes of evidence that yes, indeed, Virginia, there was a conspiracy, and the large tax-exempt foundations and comparable organizations, Rockefeller, Ford Foundation, Carnegie Endowment, the Harry Frank Guggenheim Foundation, and others were not just doing this, but in cahoots, funding un-American and even anti-American authors, literature, activities, notably in academia, to alter life. But what did Thomas McNeese write? You can't do this with the people who know what's up. I mention Clark's Law from time to time, Clark's Third Law, Arthur C. Clark's Third Law, that any sufficiently advanced technology is indistinguishable from magic. So if you dumb people down, it's not that you're smart or clever. It's just that they don't necessarily – they're naive. And you know, I always think of Nesta Webster's words to that effect when she wrote in her book World Revolution, The Plot Against Civilization, it is difficult to write of these things calmly, for to deceive the people whose simple faith and lack of education prevent them seeing whither they're being led is as cowardly as to guide a blind man into a ditch. But that's what these people do. So bad guys were doing exactly that, and trying to change things, having the benefit of time on their side at that time, because there wasn't the internet, even though it doesn't seem to do us as much good as it could these days. Still a bad guy tool, like most anything. But as Ezra Pound put it, many years ago, and he was speaking of the creature from Jekyll Island, or you know, the secrets of the Federal Reserve, as he was actually quoted. These words were a quote from the foreword of Eustace Mullins' Secrets of the Federal Reserve. Here are the simple facts of the Great Betrayal. But the point, the end of the quote applies much more broadly, much more generally. Here are the simple facts of the Great Betrayal. Wilson and House knew that they were doing something momentous. Woodrow Wilson and Edward Mandel House, the colonel who wasn't a colonel. One cannot fathom men's motives. and this pair probably believed in what they were up to. What they did not believe in was representative government. They believed in government by an uncontrolled oligarchy whose acts – listen, this is the punchline. They believed in a government by an uncontrolled oligarchy whose acts would only become apparent after an interval so long that the electorate would be forever incapable of doing anything efficient to remedy depredations. And that's precisely what was happening in that era. And ever since, and now really, it's kind of like H.G. Wells wrote, the conspiracies come right out in the open. It's the open conspiracy at this point, more and more so as time goes on. And who's going to do anything or say anything about it anyway? Because, you know, if you do, you'll probably have some unfortunate accident where your car malfunctions and, you know, you crash. And everyone thinks that you were probably under the influence of something, even though your engine was 200 feet behind your car when it exploded on the road. But I digress. So Thomas McNeese, in his report to the House Select Committee, the Reese Committee in this case, his report titled The Economics of the Public Interest, he wrote back in 1954, these original studies of the public interest disclosed that during the 4 years, 1933 to 36, these in this case the FDR years, a change took place which was so drastic as to constitute a revolution. He wasn't being hyperbolic. From 1933 to 36, a change took place which was so drastic as to constitute a revolution. They also indicated conclusively that the responsibility for the economic welfare of the American people had been transferred heavily to the executive branch of the federal government, that a corresponding change in education had taken place from an impetus outside the local community, and that this revolution had occurred without violence and with full consent of an overwhelming majority of the electorate. In seeking to explain this unprecedented phenomenon, subsequent studies pursued by the staff clearly showed it could not have occurred peacefully or with the consent of the majority unless education in the United States had been prepared in advance to endorse it. Enter what folks like Charlotte Isserby and John Taylor Gatto have revealed to us. This is what's been happening in America. This is where we are. And, you know, this in contravention to what we were given. You know, again, the letter from John Adams to Hezekiah Niles in February, on February 13, 1818. What do we mean by the revolution? The American Revolution. Do we mean the American War? The Revolution was effected before the war commenced. What happened? There was a shift from 1760 to 61. What happened? And then forward it grew. As Adams put it, this produced in 1760 and 61 an awakening and a revival. But he said most notably James Otis's defense of the Boston merchants was pivotal. It stuck with him. It was so indelibly etched in his mind that he was recounting it 57 years later. Specifically, apologizing for not doing a better job. And so where are we today as far as all of this is concerned? You know, the Stamp Act. What happened in 1765? Where are we today? You know, it's interesting. Just again, John Adams talking about what was happening. It was not until the British ministry had dared to gratify their own wishes and the desire of the nation by projecting a formal plan for raising a national revenue. Do we have a national revenue in this country now? Even though the Supreme Court held that the 16th Amendment grants no new powers of taxation, what happened then? America, Hello? What happened? Again, by contrast, so John Adams says it wasn't until the British ministry had dared to gratify their own wishes and the desire of the nation by projecting a formal plan for raising a national revenue from America by parliamentary taxation. That's when the you-know-what hit the fan. Using these acts of trade as revenue engines. And that's when things, you know, that's when all hell broke loose, basically, or started to. Things started to come undone. So you look at the sentiments of folks shortly thereafter, the Stamp Act, as one particularly odious example in 1765, and the sentiments of the day. I mean, imagine. Again, what did John Adams write? He wrote that you know, can you imagine? I mean, I mentioned the Boy Scouts thing, and people could say, well, it's, you know, it's not a big deal. No, it's not. But it's the continual assault on everything. I've mentioned that, you know, in tech circles now, disruptive is a buzz term. It's cool. When I was growing up, disruptive was a pejorative, and it was something that probably got you spanked. Now it's cool. You probably get a promotion and, you know, another zero added to your salary, the more disruptive you are. And actually, before Google, you know, before the Alphabet deal nonsense, Google, what is it, Google Ventures, I want to say, bragged that they set aside $300 million a year. $300 million a year to fund the most disruptive tech entrepreneurs. That's the language they use. Not the most, you know, not the best ideas, the most disruptive tech entrepreneurs. And so it's a sort of nihilistic culture that permeates out into the rest of society. That's what girls in Boy Scouts represents to me, nihilism. The complete disdain for institutions of any kind, traditions of any kind. And so, you know, if you're just going to set fire to society, what happens? Eventually, you're standing on an ash heap. Congratulations. Look what you've done. Look what a wonderful accomplishment it is. And from there, back to Pike's letter to Mazzini in 1871, August 15, and, you know, we shall unleash the nihilists and the atheists, the most, as I call it, the most prophetic letter that was never written, historians would like us to believe. You know, that's coming true every day. How did he know? The natural state of children is not to be nihilistic, predatory, Machiavellian, and just wicked. You know, sure, there's, you know, the Bible says foolishness is bound up in the heart of a child, but the rod will drive it far from him. I understand, I know. But, you know, there is, you know, there's mischief, and then there's wickedness. And I believe there's a distinction in some context. And what I'm talking about is a premeditated wickedness, a predatory psychopathy. And that is, again, that's something that America is seeing. I think the most perhaps notable example of it is William Devil Bill Livingston Rockefeller, father of the original John, who was a snake oil salesman, literally. And, you know, that's been the sort of archetypal model that America has been adopting ever since, unfortunately. We'll be right back.
Tired of being lied to by mass media? It's growing more and more apparent today that news is received less and less through standard media outlets. Even with a growing audience every day, RBN is beginning to direct more efforts into social media. Social media and the use of the internet is fast becoming the primary source of people for news, regardless of demographic. RBN has set out to provide some of the best news on the internet through republicbroadcasting.org and also has begun to use the tools to our advantage by way of social media. Republic Broadcasting is now operating a Facebook page to function as yet another avenue to have our collective voice reach new audiences across not only America, but across the globe as well. The Facebook page features not only news, but also an RBN player to listen to our broadcast. Get involved by visiting facebook.com/republicbroadcasting and liking our page and share it with your friends and family, because you can handle the truth.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing: knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
Welcome back. Do you think it's odd, as do I, that we don't hear about James Otis? Why don't we hear about James Otis? You know, when the second president under the Constitution, first vice president, says, I sincerely believe 200 years ago, almost to the day, I sincerely believe Mr. Otis to have been the earliest and the principal founder of one of the greatest political revolutions that ever occurred among men. You would think James Otis would be essential reading. I remember Eli Whitney from grade school. I don't think I ever heard of James Otis. Perhaps Eli Whitney stuck with me. He seems to stick with a lot of people. I wonder why that is. Eli Whitney and the cotton gin. Why does that stick? What does Malcolm Gladwell have to say about that stickiness? James Otis, however, virtually lost, virtually occluded, down the memory hole. Why is that? You know, when John Adams, I mean, those are strong words. The principal founder of one of the greatest political revolutions that ever occurred among men. And Adams wrote, "It seems to me of some importance that his name and character should not be forgotten." I have not read everything that John Adams wrote, but I've never seen that sentiment expressed anywhere else. Not by him, not by any of these men. That this one person, his name and character should not be forgotten. That is significant, profoundly so. Why? Because it's the embodiment of this concept of what it means to be American. That's why. And if you can somehow remove that from people, if you can breathe that out of them to extirpate it from them, you know, then I guess you don't have to worry about it anymore. You hide that history. And it's been going away. Slowly. And then not so slowly. It's accelerating now. Not to our benefit. We keep hearing these, don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. No, it's good. It'll all work out. Not so much. Here are some of the things, you know, you tell me, in contrast to what's going on. So we have, I remember, just a quick story. I remember a young man who graduated from seminary, talking to him about 10 years ago. He brought up Kent Hovind, Dr. Dino. And I said, it was, for some reason, we started talking about the income tax. This is a kid who graduated from seminary recently based on this discussion. And he brought up Dr. Dino, Kent Hovind. And I said, I'm not familiar with the specifics, the details of exactly what happened. And before I could say another word, he said the 16th Amendment was properly ratified, which was an odd statement for a seminary graduate, I thought. Very, very odd. Why would that be something that would be covered in seminary? The furthest corner. So basically, you want to talk about a propaganda job. Whew, man. I would encourage that young man to go. There's a website, I've mentioned it, America in Class, has some fun resources, actually. And America in Class, brought to you by the National Humanities Center, which is interesting, and I always find that provocative, but it's good stuff. Actually, there's a lot of great material there. So if you go to americainclass.org/sources/making revolution, you'll see this series, Making the Revolution, America, 1763 to 1791. Here's a section, 1760, the section titled Crisis, 1763 to 1775. And 1765 to 66, Stamp Act Crisis. What was going on there? And here are some of the things that were said. And just the context here, you could say, is basically this. If you take the national income tax, so-called, and compare it to the Stamp Act. Well, let's just say the Stamp Act pales by comparison. It's a drop in the bucket. And wait till you hear what some of the some of the contemporaries had to say about it.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Oh, homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2 keep it today.
Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to AROutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AROutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds, up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield tactical bipods. AirOutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more. Plus Magpul clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited, so take a breath. Head to AirOutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it at AROutfitting.com.
Hey folks, CBD is the home run hitter for health right now. Why, you ask? Because of what it does for the body. Unfortunately, I can't tell you all about the benefit. You know, there's reasons. Do your due diligence and log on to AncientLifeOil.com. That's AncientLifeOil.com. Ancient Life Oil uses organic ingredients and is blended in coconut oil for some of the best benefits. Legal in 50 states and non-psychoactive. Log on to AncientLifeOil.com. That's AncientLifeOil.com.
Do you worry a lot? Whether you're a college student, busy professional, parent, or grandparent, ongoing stress and elevated levels of the stress hormone cortisol can rob your memory, your health, and your future. Now you can combat the effects of stress and anxiety while improving your memory and recall at the same time with the dietary supplement Calm and Clever. Studies show that the ingredients in Calm and Clever reduce cortisol by as much as 30% in 1 to 2 weeks. Call 1-800-758-8746 or calmandclever.com.
Welcome back. Bottom of the second hour of today's National Intel Report, this Friday, July 6, 2018. And let me say, first of all, again, I am guest host Chris Hinckley, sitting in for John Stadmiller, obviously. And let me just say, I don't know what's going on with the phones. If there's something weird going on, I apologize. We had some strange stuff going on this morning. Apparently, I don't know. Maybe people tried to call earlier, and I don't know what was happening. If you have, the phone lines are open, 800-313-9443. Again, 800-313-9443. If there's something going on, I apologize. I'm unaware of it. We're unaware of it, to my knowledge. So anyway, continuing, I want to make a comparison, I suppose. Yeah, phones are working. So anyway, before I do, though, are you as freaked out as I am about what we're witnessing, the, you know, just, you know, just this weird, I mean, what happens on 4th of July, so-called, you know, it's supposed to be, I don't like it when I hear happy 4th of July. I don't want to hear that. I want to hear Independence Day, happy Independence Day. I think most people are reluctant because deep down inside, we all know something is wrong. Things are not as we are, you know, led to believe in precisely the fashion that Bertrand Russell wrote in The Impact of Science on Society. Folks do not know from whence their opinions derive. The way he put it, the populace will not be allowed to know how its convictions were generated. You ask anybody, you know, people spout rhetoric all the time, the rhetoric they hear wherever, here and there. And so how did you come by that conviction? Was that through your own understanding? No, oh, it's rhetoric. They're cleverly Smith talking points and they work. So anyway, the populace will not be allowed to know how its convictions were generated, Russell wrote in The Impact of Science on Society. It should have been The Impact of Technocracy on Society. And that was chapter two. In chapter three, he wrote, diet, injections, and injunctions will combine from a very early age to produce the sort of character and sort of beliefs that the authorities consider desirable. And any serious criticism of the powers that be will become psychologically impossible. Even if all are miserable, all will believe themselves happy because the government will tell them that they are so. Well, then I guess we must be happy. Anyway, I don't think people want to talk about Independence Day because then the uncomfortable reality bubbles up to the surface. But it's awkward to watch what happens, to watch people stand around in their stupid little fenced-in areas. This is exactly what you can and can't do, and you have the little – you know, the brown shirts marching around in military gear, making sure that every, I mean, what is going on in this society? Seriously. I think the goofballs out in the woods, the idiots out in the woods are more free than these people. There's no arguing. There's no contesting that. However, you know, unwise and imprudent they may be, you know, with dogs grabbing Roman candles and running through camp, you know, camping areas or whatever, they're still more free. You're free to choose to do right. You know, Paul wrote more than once, all things are lawful, but not all things are profitable. All things are lawful, but not all things edify. Does it edify? And, you know, as Pastor Bob Davis at Calvary Chapel in Post Falls once remarked, God, do you know how much trouble I could get in? I mean, if all things are lawful, really? Yeah, that's why we need help. That's the whole point, the moral of the story, so to speak. So just quickly, a couple of remarks and then to the phones. The colonists respond to the Stamp Act. You know, here is the Pennsylvania Journal and Weekly, the Pennsylvania Journal and Weekly Advertiser, October 31, 1765, Halloween. Because bad guys love that kind of crap. The day before the Stamp Act went into effect, and the cover of the Pennsylvania Journal and Weekly Advertiser has the skull and crossbones on it, and it says, an emblem of the effects of the stamp, oh, the fatal stamp. And just a few remarks quickly, and I encourage folks to look this up. Again, you can find this and more at the site that I mentioned, americainclass.org/sources/making revolution. So here's what John Dickinson wrote, Broadside, Philadelphia, November 1765. Friends and countrymen, skipping ahead, he wrote, if you comply with the act, capital A, by using stamped papers, you fix... Listen to this language. You fix, you rivet perpetual chains upon your unhappy country. You unnecessarily, voluntarily, establish the detestable precedent. And remember what Jefferson said about precedents? A departure from principle in one instance becomes a precedent for a second, that precedent for a second, and that second for a third, and so on, until the bulk of society is reduced to mere automatons of misery, et cetera, et cetera. So, if you do this, you unnecessarily, voluntarily establish the detestable precedent, which those who have forged your fetters ardently wish for, to varnish the future exercise of this new claimed authority. You may judge of the use that will be made of it by the eagerness with which the pack of ministerial tools have hunted for precedents to palliate the horrors of this attack upon American freedom. The Stamp Act, therefore, is to be regarded only as an experiment of your disposition. If you quietly bend your necks to the yoke, to that yoke, you prove yourselves ready to receive any bondage to which your lords and masters shall please to subject you. Who uses this kind of language today? Man, if we were that courageous. Some persons perhaps may fondly hope it will be as easy to obtain a repeal of the Stamp Act after it is put into execution as if the execution of it is avoided, but be not deceived. The late ministry publicly declared, quote, that it was intended to establish the power of Great Britain to tax the colonies. Can we imagine then that when so great a point is carried and we have tamely submitted, that any other ministry will venture to purpose, or that Parliament will consent to pass an act to renounce this advantage? No. Power is of a tenacious nature. What it seizes, it will retain. John Dickinson. Daniel Delaney wrote, "The right of exemption from all taxes without their consent, the colonies claim as British subjects. They derive this right from the common law, which their charters have declared and confirmed, and they conceive that when stripped of this right, they are at the same time deprived of every privilege distinguishing free men from slaves." And more, much more. Again, well, George Washington, "The Stamp Act imposed on the colonies by the Parliament of Great Britain engrosses the conversation of the speculative part of the colonists who look upon this unconstitutional method of taxation as a direful attack upon their liberties and loudly exclaim against the violation." I mentioned John Adams already. "The year 1765 has been a most remarkable year of my life," he wrote. "That enormous engine fabricated by the British Parliament for battering down all the rights and liberties of America, I mean the Stamp Act, has raised and spread through the whole continent a spirit that will be recorded to our honor with all future generations. In every colony from Georgia to New Hampshire, inclusively, the stamp distributors and inspectors have been compelled by the unconquerable rage of the people to renounce their offices. Such and so universal has been the resentment of the people that every man who has dared to speak in favor of the stamps or to soften the detestation," and this is what I mean when I refer to the Boy Scout, that I've seen people say, "Oh, it's so great, the girls." No, it's not great. It's anything but great. You know, destroying institutions and tearing down traditions and things for the sake of what? Vainglory is not great. Stealing from people through sleight of hand, whether it's William Devil Bill Livingston Rockefeller archetype or the other sort of counterpart to it, which I think of John Candy's character in Stripes, Dewey Oxburger, Ox, stealing from his fellow servicemen who don't know how to play poker. That's what these people do. They find it fun. Oh, look how stupid they are. No, they're not stupid. They're just, you know, the way Nesta Webster put it, simple faith. They're of simple faith and they lack the education. They don't even comprehend that you would do something so reprehensible, so detestable and wicked. and you prey on their naivete. That's unfortunate and disgusting. So John Adams wrote, such a man, such and so universal has the resentment of the people that has been the resentment of the people that every man who dared to speak in favor of the stamps or to soften the detestation in which they were held, how great soever his abilities and virtues had been esteemed before, or whatever his fortune, connections, and influence had been, has been seen to sink into universal contempt and ignominy. The people, even to the lowest ranks, have become more attentive to their liberties. Man, I wish we could see that in America. More inquisitive about them and more determined to defend them than they were ever before known or had occasion to be. And he said more, but that's enough for now. And then Benjamin Franklin, in his testimony before the House of Commons in relation to the Stamp Act, February 13, 1766, he was asked some poignant questions and his answers were provocative. And it's interesting, you know, there's a gaslighting in America today. You watch Aaron Russo's America, Freedom to Fascism, which I think is part two of a series. Trading Places was part one, in my opinion. And then he just took the gloves off in America, Freedom to Fascism. But you watch the conversation he has with the IRS commissioner, and there's a gaslighting. Voluntary consent, my you-know-what. That's the gaslighting. At least the British Parliament was honest. There was at least some honor among thieves at that point. So the question is asked, was it well, I don't want to belabor this, but so he was asked, I'll just conclude with this. Benjamin Franklin was asked, was it an opinion in America before 1763 that the Parliament had no right to lay taxes or duties there? Benjamin Franklin answers, I never heard any objection to the right of laying duties to regular commerce. But what is the issue specifically? He says, I never heard any objection to the right of laying duties to regulate commerce, but a right to lay internal taxes was never supposed to be in Parliament, as we are not represented there. Then he's asked again, on what do you found your opinion that the people in America made any such distinction? He answered, I know that whenever the subject has occurred in conversation where I have been present, it has appeared to be the opinion of everyone that we could not be taxed in a Parliament where we were not represented. And, you know, I'll leave it at that. There's more, but hopefully some of this makes sense. Anyway, to the phones. John in Kentucky, thanks for calling. Welcome.
Hello.
Hey, John.
Yeah, I would like to say something about your comments to Jefferson's use of usufruct, that only the living can have the use of the earth. Usufruct. And that's basically what's happening now, too. And it's because people don't understand what's really going on with all this behind the scenes principalities and powers on high that have stolen our rights away. Have you ever read Chisholm versus Georgia?
Yes. And
if you skip over Iredell, you'll see that Wilson, Cushing, and John Jay basically say that when we won the Revolutionary War, we now are individuals that have the rights from straight from God, not through the Constitution, not from the government, from God.
Right, and that's exactly, and that's exactly why I mention John Adams' reference to James Otis, because that's exactly what James Otis defense one of the central points of James Otis' defense of the Boston merchants. And you know, as John Adams put it, in by his recollection, that was sort of where that all really, that was the spark.
Yes, anyway. And there are all these, there's a series of quotes from a man named Norman Federer, F-E-D-E-R-E-R, America's God and Country. And under this, you'll see that all the founders that you're talking about have quotes in this book that show that without God, we wouldn't have a country.
Yeah.
And so it's very important, and I'd like to just lay a few things on you real quick and see if you have answers to some of these things. Do you remember in the Bible where it says, "Behold, I have foretold you all things"? Do you remember here?
Isaiah 46, 9 and 10 is one of those sort of passages, yeah.
Yeah, it's in Mark 13, 23 and Matthew 24, 25 also. If any man If any man shall add to unto these things, God shall add unto him the plagues that are written in this book. And if any man shall take away from the words of this book, of this prophecy, God shall take away his part out of the book of life. That's Revelation 22, verse 18 and 19. Now, you have a lot of New Age Bible versions, including the NIV, the NESV, and a myriad of other books that are out there that are all copyrighted. Because they're copyrighted, they have altered the words by at least 5%. Right there, it automatically, in the King James, where it says this in Revelation 22, 18 and 19, is the end of the Bible, the third and fourth verse from the end. And that's one of the problems, is that we have these New Age Bible versions that are diversions away from the truth. Okay? Another passage, "My people are destroyed for lack of knowledge. Because thou hast rejected knowledge, I will also reject thee. That thou shalt be no priest to me. Yes, seeing that thou hast forgotten the law of thy God, I will also forget thy children." So in other words, another passage, "Study to show thyself approved unto God, a workman that needs not be ashamed, rightly dividing the word of truth. But shun profane and vain babblings, for they will increase up to more ungodliness." 2 Timothy 2, 15 and 16.
Yeah, the one caveat I would...
Go ahead, sorry. The main thing I'm trying to get across is that as all the things that you're talking about that are common knowledge that we are, you know, in the Constitution, this is the most wonderful country and all this... You can, from what your conversation says today, is completely undercutting all that, right? You're saying that there's an oligarchy that does run things behind the scenes. And what I'm saying is that's true, but it's also true of religion. So what are we going to do about that? I'm trying to get across that there is a way to understand this, and we can get the upper hand. And I've been trying to get some people to listen to me on this network, and so far, have not had a whole lot of success. Okay, let me ask just a few more things here, ask you questions. Of the seven churches written about in Revelation 2 and 3...
Before we do that, though, I have a point of clarification.
Sure.
I have a point of clarification. You know, when it comes to translations, I understand the point, and it's a valid point, but I would make the caveat that, you know, Paul made it clear in Romans 1, and that's not an isolated passage, that... We don't even need this printed word, so to speak, to know who God is. I mean, the fact that Paul uses language like, for since the creation of the world, his invisible, capital H, his invisible attributes, his eternal power and divine nature have been clearly seen. Sounds like an oxymoron. How do you see clearly what is invisible? And it's because it's so obvious all around us. And I won't get into that right now, but... the definitive passage on the issue of translations, in my opinion, and this is to edify, folks listening who might be discouraged, because I think it could be discouraging. So, well, what do I read? Do I just read King James? I feel like I can read this. And I think the Holy Spirit sorts that out. 1 Corinthians chapter 2, to me, makes that clear. And it's spirit talk, basically, the way that Paul writes in 1 Corinthians chapter 2. The Bible to the natural man does not, you know, he says the natural man does not accept the things of God, for they are foolishness to him, and he cannot understand them because they are spiritually appraised. And so you have to, it's spirit talk, basically. You get what I call the secret decoder ring, which is the Holy Spirit. You invite the Holy Spirit to reveal, you know, scripture to you, and it's different. It you know, it's the key that unlocks scripture. Anyway, that's a caveat, I would say.
Okay, well, I have to disagree with you on that, because if you look at the different versions and compare all the different versions with Ezekiel chapter 13, where God is saying through Ezekiel that we have a lot of false prophets up to about verse 18, and we have women that are sewing pillowcases and covering up my every knuckle of my outstretched arms. This is what God is saying. He wants everybody to come to him. But there it says, and that teach my people to fly away, you know, instead of standing against Satan. That's what we're supposed to do, like I said in the first verse in Hosea that I read to you, is that my people are destroyed for lack of knowledge, okay? So what are you supposed to do? What do you put the gospel armor on for? Is to stand against the fiery darts of Satan. If you look at your Ezekiel 13 in these other versions, it'll say, as the birds, instead of that God is against those that teach his people to fly. That he's against those people that are teaching this false doctrine of rapture. And so that's one of the things. Now, back to the question of the seven churches.
We're running out of time. We're going to have to table that for next time, for sure. There's not enough time. And so anyway.
Anyway, it's a spiritual war, principalities and powers on high. And I think that what we need to do is get in line with what God says that we're not in line with now. And I'd love to talk to you more about that and fill you in if you
afterwards. I welcome the conversation, but, you know, I mean.
It's up to you.
Yeah.
It's
not.
Get God on our side. That's what we need. We can't do it ourselves. We need God on our side.
Yeah, I'm sort of reminded of that bumper sticker.
You can't be part way.
Yeah, I'm sort of reminded of a bumper sticker, you know, God is my co-pilot. I'm in the wrong seat if God is my co-pilot. Anyway, that'll do it. I apologize, Ken. You know, I don't know. Something was going on with the phones, whatever. Anyway, sorry we didn't get to you in time. Folks, I hope you have a great weekend. I hope we have time to reflect on this issue during this season of Independence Day and so forth. I hope it was informative. Have a great weekend.
Do you know there is an ongoing war right here in America? Are you aware that U.S. citizens have been classified as enemies of the state since 1933? Have you recognized that our entire government is really a vast network of interlocking corporations engaged in commerce? Look up Title 28, Section 3002. Tune in to In Defense of Humanity on Saturday nights at 7 p.m. Central Time. Find out what's really going on and learn how to protect yourself and your family as flesh and blood men and women living in a corporate reality.
This is RBN. The Republic Broadcasting Network.